From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 351, recorded live Thursday, December 20th, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, training developers to work smarter, and now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Richard Sorrell about the Nancy Web Framework.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, a holiday episode, and I'm talking to Richard Sorrell, and how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time. I realize that it's the 27th of December, and we've all recovering from our Christmas comas, and having you take the time on this kind of quasi-holiday week is appreciated.
No problem.
I wanted to come back and talk about Nancy. We had talked about Nancy, which was a .NET micro web framework in June of 2011. So it's been about 18 months. And I think that enough stuff has happened in the kind of alternative .NET framework space and also some of the modularization of ASP.NET that it's time to come back and talk about it again. And you do work for Pluralsight and have recently done a Nancy course. Is that something that Pluralsight subscribers can watch now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So Nancy fits into the .NET ecosystem how?
Nancy would be built in .NET. You use .NET to use it, right, to build your websites. But it has no dependency on ASP.NET at all, unless you actually make it, which would be using the ASP.NET hosting provider, which would, you know, allow you to host it on IIS. But it's independent of system.web. Which is kind of interesting. So it has its own HTTP listener and all that created for it.
Oh, that's interesting. So I had assumed that if you were going to make a web framework, you would kind of sit on top of, at the very least, system.web. That's an interesting design decision.
I think they did that too. So that they being Andreas and Steven, so the Code Junkie and Grumpy Dev, did that to basically make sure that they weren't dependent on the changes that would come across via, you know, what system.web is making you do to handling it their own way. And I think we'll probably get into that their own way a little bit later here.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I understand that Nancy also works on Mono being the clean room implementation of .NET on Linux and other alternative operating systems. And one of the goals that they have is to make Nancy work smoothly on Mono and be able to use Mono develop.
Right.
So being able to sit just on the CLR is a way for them to do that.
Correct.
Okay. So it's a micro framework and it is just for .NET. It sits on top of .NET, but not on top of ASP.NET. Does it have any relationship to other frameworks? Is it inspired by Ruby or inspired by something on Rails?
Yeah, I would say that the inspiration for it was Sinatra. So building not quite a port, but an inspiration of Sinatra on .NET was where Andreas originally, when he originally put this out, was talking about. In his particular work, he's using .NET. They don't get to use Ruby, and Sinatra is a very compelling framework to use. I've used it myself a couple times, and it's actually pretty fun to write in. Mm-hmm. So to be able to do that on .NET would be a kind of an interesting thing to pull off, and I think they did that very well, actually.
Right, and this is something that happens a lot in .NET, where it's like, hey, we have this language, we have this great CLR, we have this experience that we're very familiar with. We want the fun and the flexibility of framework X written on whatever, on Python or on Ruby or whatever, except right. We have .NET available to us, and that's what we're excited about. So hence Nancy Sinatra.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yes, you got it.
Okay. So where do I start if I'm going to make a Nancy application? And am I making apps that return HTML, or am I making apps that return JSON?
You're making apps that return pretty much whatever you want. So HTML is the default. You can return JSON. They recently put in content negotiation. So depending on what you ask for, you can get back either JSON or XML or HTML or whatever you've asked for as far as a content type. Hmm. It's fairly easy to get started, especially if you know you're used to doing the particular ASP.NET type style. In Visual Studio, you can go grab the ASP.NET hosting, so nancy.hosting.asp.net, and it will pull down the Nancy core and the hosting provider, and you can run it right on IIS. It's actually fairly easy. In the course that I did, I show that, and you have a up and running site in just a few minutes.
Okay. So let's break that down a little bit. When I make a new Nancy application, do I say file new Nancy application and it's in there somewhere, or do I make a class library? Or
you do file new. The easiest way would be to do the empty ASP.NET project. So you get basically no folders, just the basic site. Mm-hmm. And then you pull in those packages, the ASP.NET hosting package and Nancy package, and you have one class, and you can basically have an endpoint that returns. So that I think on the nancyfx.org, if you go to that site, you can see the smallest Nancy application is, you know, like 6 lines of code that will return you back an HTML response.
Okay. And you typically will derive from Nancy module.
Correct.
That is not an HTTP module. Again, there is no ASP.NET dependency.
Right. So Nancy module is just kind of a wrapper class for it hosts the Nancy context, which has a request object, a response object, some collection type things for you to work with. But the request is basically the HTTP request that you've received from your browser, and response is what you're sending back. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get into the pipeline. So like you have the ASP.NET pipeline, there is a Nancy pipeline. Mm-hmm. And so there's things that happen before you handle the request, and there are things that happen after you handle the request, and you handle the request as well.
Now, using the very simple example, is public class, some module derives from Nancy module. And then in the constructor, it uses an extremely unusual syntax that likes some aspects of C#, but also doesn't really look like C#, at least because it's so unusual. Basically, he's saying get, then he uses an array indexer with a string. So he'll say get array indexer slash. So he's putting into an array indexed, not an array rather, but it's a hash table. It's a dictionary.
Yes.
A dictionary indexed on a slash, and then he uses the anonymous underscore, and then passes in a lambda. So the effect of it is like, is this really .NET? Is this really C#? It's kind of a visually an unusual effect because we don't find ourselves writing lines like that very often.
Well, yeah, normally we don't write that much code into a constructor as far as doing actual things. I think that's probably the first thing that throws people, mm-hmm. is what am I doing in here? And the underscore has thrown people as far as having that particular anonymous parameter in there, right? Normally we name our parameters, but that really is something that helps you pull things off what you're putting in that indexer. So. And really it's a route. So that particular thing, you're just defining a route. So the route has a method of get, it has a path of slash, and we're going to do something with that. And
okay.
So you can put post and put and delete in there and have your particular pathing in there.
Okay. So the named dictionary get is representing the HTTP verb that I want. So I presume that all the verbs that one would want are available, like you
yes.
said, get,
yes.
post, put, delete, and probably the obscure ones as well.
Yes.
Then the array indexer is, or I keep saying array, but I think of those as arrays. The dictionary indexer there is the route.
Right.
Then the underscore is just, I suppose I could name it if I wanted to.
Right. So what that is if you create a parameter in your route. So for instance, if I say slash name slash something and I put it in curly braces in my route, it will pull off that particular parameter and give you access to it. So I'm trying to think of a good example of doing that. I use it all the time. So
if you said get greet, and then we were going to pass in the person's name.
Right, or pass in an ID. So if I say I want to get customer number whatever, so customer slash, and our parameter would be ID, I could then in the function there have access to underscore dot ID. Mm-hmm. And so if I passed in a 1 or a 2 or whatever, that would be available to me as a parameter.
Okay. And presumably if you passed in multiple ones, you would have variable, comma, variable, comma, variable.
Right. Right.
And the name is up to you. And how does it map them to each other? I don't have to name it ID.
No, you don't have to name it ID. You name it whatever you want.
But how does it know where name comes from? Like if I say, customer and ID, let's, for example, if I say slash customer slash curly brace ID.
Right.
Do I have to name that next variable ID, or do I dig that out some other way?
So you'd be slash curly brace slash ID slash close curly brace slash something. You know, if I wanted to get their orders. So I got that particular customer slash orders slash order ID. Mm-hmm. Right. So I just get access to those from that particular lambda.
I see. So it isn't that it's not the name of the variable. It's the digging around in it. I would say customer slash ID, and then later on I could say X dot ID.
Right, right.
Okay. And is that a dynamic that then gets passed in? There seems like a lot of dynamic stuff going on here.
Oh, there's a whole ton of dynamic stuff going on there. They actually have a class called the dynamic dictionary. So it does some fun stuff where you get access to it. It's case insensitive by default. Mm-hmm. So I can do, I can have lowercase in my path there, and I can grab it using uppercase if I want in the function. So, they're doing some fun stuff with dynamics. It can get you in trouble sometimes, but for the most part, it's pretty smart.
Yeah, I think that there's an interesting back and forth right now with the .NET community, with some groups inside of Microsoft that aren't the ASP.NET team, as well as the ASP.NET team itself, as we kind of come to terms with what modern C# looks like. You know, it doesn't all have to be statically typed. It can have this nice middle ground. You know, dynamic is effectively turning on a switch that says unsafe. But for some people, it's a way of turning on a switch that just says, and now the fun happens, right?
Right.
If you look at folks like Rob, like my friend Rob Connery, when you're doing things like Massive, his ORM, or things like Simple Data, or any of the other micro ORMs, those guys are saying, how much fun can we have with dynamics, and how little code can we do like a lot of work with, and things are becoming very interesting. The question is then, how much ceremony is appropriate? You know, I mean, IntelliSense is useful. How much IntelliSense am I losing here with Nancy?
You're actually not losing too much. The dynamic just makes it easier. Yes, you use a whole lot less code to deal with those things, because when I pass ID into another function, if that function is statically typed, it's going to go ahead and cast that over into that function, right? You're going to get what you need when you throw that in there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes though, when you return back, here's the part about C# that .NET that gets us in trouble, is if I return from a function that I pass a dynamic in, even if the function is statically typed, I get a dynamic back. And that causes problems sometimes down the line for us.
Okay. Well, what might be an example of something like this?
So if I were to do that customer order or customer ID or whatever, you know, I pass in this dynamic of an ID, but I'm returning back a customer. What I actually get back is a dynamic. And if I may or may not be able to work with that unless I cast it into the customer. Does that make sense?
I think so. Try it again.
let's see. So sometimes, like if you have a list, I'm going to return back a list of orders, right? And I'm going to send that through an iterator. sometimes the iterator won't know what to do with that, right? If you do a var order in orders, if that orders is dynamic, it might not realize that that's a list, and it starts complaining about it.
So right? Then I'll have to give it some hint.
Right. I have to hint the framework, or I have to hint my code to say that this is actually not a dynamic. It's a list of orders.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So basically, if it gets a little confused, if it can't glean something, I give it a little hint.
Right. Right. And I think that's a problem with C# maybe and not .NET, because I know F# is really good at figuring out what types you're working with.
Right. And this is where, you know, the whole static versus dynamic thing gets a little confusing.
Yes.
But it's a tiny price to pay for a very, very powerful concept.
Yes. I've noticed that, you know, there are times when I've used dynamic to deal with things that where I'd have to cast things around and create multiple methods to handle something where they have very similar signatures. So my classes have very similar signatures. And if I cast it to dynamic and I handle it in the same way, it just works.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that the Nancy guys have done a good job of finding the right amount of balance, because there's clearly a sense of fun to the framework, and a sense of cleanliness, and a sense of haiku almost, you know. they're trying to do as much as possible for as little as possible.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And in order to do that, dynamic, I think, is the way to go. And I'd like to see more people like the ASP.NET team ourselves embrace that. I think we saw a little bit of that with the Orchard project. But I think it's an ongoing, confusing thing for .NET developers.
Yeah, it's hard to get used to, but you know, once you start using dynamic and you see how powerful it can be, I think you kind of get addicted. Of course, one of the guys that I work with actually hates dynamics because of this, you know, casting problem. It just causes him problems all the time.
Sure.
And so, yeah, you can be on either side of the fence with that, I guess.
Well, I think it gets to ease of debugging. People like IntelliSense, they like debugging. So let's talk a little bit more about the fact that all of this is in the constructor. You're going to fill up almost where the constructor becomes its you know, the whole program.
Right.
Can I still hit breakpoints? And when I hit them, am I really in the constructor, or am I getting those breakpoints when the action occurs?
So just like anything, you know, you can refactor out of that. So you may start with a very small class where you're returning right out of the function, but that function is actually a type. Mm-hmm. You know, it's returning a response. So it's a function that takes in a string and maybe some conditional logic and then returning a response. Mm-hmm. So really I can just pass that to a method. And once your classes get a little larger, you may want to pull that out. But, you know, even then, you're probably putting handlers inside. You know, you're not really doing all of your work inside that constructor. You're going to pass that out to another handler class or something like that.
Right. And it's also important to remember that we aren't actually putting code in the constructor. It's kind of funny. You're like, well, wait a second. All the code is in the instructor. Well, you're setting up actions that will occur later. You're hooking up event handlers.
Yes.
In the constructor.
Yes.
They're not, you know, nothing's running in the constructor that is anything you need to worry about. And I'm sure that one could argue, well, this is where we needed an init, and there needed to be an init and a before init and all this kind of stuff. I bet if we were speaking for Andreas and the other folks on Nancy, they would say, but that would be more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, if you want to have a real simple program, you don't need all of that, mm-hmm. right? A function will do fine.
Exactly. And there's something to be said for making Hello World super easy.
Yeah.
Super simple.
Yeah, it's really an easy framework to get people excited about, because you look at how easy it is to get started. You can do complex things in this framework. I mean, we call it a micro framework, and I think when it started, it was very much a micro framework, mm-hmm. but it scales pretty well to larger projects.
Yeah. Well, and it's got a lot of really interesting helpers that I like. And one of the things that made me happy about Rails was the action pack, you know, all that kind of cool convenience stuff that you add on to Ruby that blurs the line between, well, what's Ruby and what's Rails and what's built in and what's not.
Right.
There's some cool stuff in Nancy that I feel like should be just done that way everywhere. Like you can say response.asjs to return JavaScript and response.asimage.
Right.
That's so much nicer than the way things are done in other frameworks.
And since I've been using Nancy, seeing some of those patterns, my code has a bunch of that in it as well. I create extension methods all the time to handle that kind of thing. It's just cleaner code, right? If I'm not calling out a new something to call a method, right? I just create this extension method and it works.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes for very fluent without trying not to overuse that word fluent kind of code. I'm not a huge fan of trying to build fake sentences in .NET.
Right.
And I think that there are some frameworks that overdo it, but I don't get that impression with Nancy.
No.
One of the things that I found interesting about it, because I'm an ASP.NET guy from day zero. So it's been a little confusing when I start poking around in things like request.form. I expect it to work the way I would think request.form works currently. But when I say request.form, it's not quote unquote my request.form. It's not the one that I'm used to in ASP.NET. It's more dynamic dictionary.
It's a dynamic dictionary, yes.
Yeah. But that's cool, which means I get to say request.form.email.
Yes.
And it'll automatically pull it out there. And I don't have to look at the ugly dictionary indexer.
Yeah, I love dynamic dictionary. I actually wish that was actually part of the framework. You know, the BCL. That would be awesome.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why. I think there's, and this is what I was saying before, there's still a fear that we're giving people too much rope.
Yeah, you can. But, you know, you have to learn these things and you have to make sure that you're doing things in a proper way. And if you write tests around it, especially, you're going to be very, very much in a good place.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you make a distinction between having a web services application and an actual web app that returns HTTP? Like right now, there's ASP.NET MVC, there's kind of ASP.NET proper, and there's web API, and it's kind of a little balkanized. And we're currently kind of bringing that together into this one ASP.NET concept.
Right.
And initially, I thought that Nancy was just about returning JavaScript and doing web services. But now I'm seeing apps that'll do everything. So an entire web app can be made in this.
Yes. And actually, when I started using it, I think I started using it when it was at .8. I started looking at it at .6, but at .8 I started using it. It's at .14.1 right now, mm-hmm. very close to 15. So probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. That's all I used it for was for an API endpoint, a web API endpoint, mm-hmm. returning JSON. And it wasn't until a little bit later that I started looking at how can we use this as you know, a full-on web app. And with content negotiation, which came out with 12, now you don't have to decide, right? Your endpoints can be an API endpoint or a view endpoint. And it's really wild. So you can change how you think of something. So a lot of the times when you think of, I'm going to go out and look at an API documentation site, right? So you can go out to Stack Overflow and you can look at their API and how you want to interact with it. Well, that API interaction point can also be your documentation point, right? Depending on how I come to it. So if I come to it with a browser, I can see how to interact with it because I'm going to return one type of view. But mm-hmm. if I actually come to it using, XHR request, right? I'm actually interacting and saying accept JSON or accept XML. I'm going to get a different response back, which is probably just the API endpoint. So it's kind of interesting to see that mesh, and I'm really excited. I haven't been able to work with that too much yet, mm-hmm. but I'm really excited to be able to have one endpoint that acts as my documentation and as my API endpoint.
Right. It's almost like a formalization that the URL is an important user interface element.
And it is, right? That's what HTTP was supposed to be. It's just a resource endpoint. And I know you've probably heard Glenn Block go off on resources, right? Mm-hmm. This is a URI that points to a resource, and your representation that comes back depends on what you're asking for.
Right.
And this is a perfect example. It's just a URI to a resource.
I think that web API, ASP.NET web API begins to do that as well, but I don't think any framework really does it with minimal ceremony. And I think that's what the goal ultimately is. It should be effortless.
Right. Nancy's super duper happy path. That's their mantra. It should be easy to do anything, very quick, and it should also be easy to override the native conventions.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that Nancy does really well is it integrates with other projects. It has a lot of extension points. So there's other existing vendors like New Relic, or there's existing projects like ELMA. So you can get like exception logging for Nancy using ELMA, ELMAH. Mm-hmm. There's the Lightning Cache, the Nancy Lightning Cache.
Right.
And then also Razor, because Razor is open source. So there's I saw this one thing that was kind of cool. ASP.NET Sprite and Image Optimization for Nancy.
Yes.
Built on top of a Microsoft Sprite and Image Optimization system. So people are plugging these things together in really, really interesting ways. And it's funny, if you look at that one example that from Jeff Clay's about implementing Sprites and Nancy and Razor all on top of each other, you can tell which part is very Nancy-like and which part is very kind of classic ASP.NET. Because in the convention, there's a lot of list of funk of this, of that, and static convention builder. And it's very old school .NET. It's almost very, it's very noisy. It's very visually, from a code perspective, just a little verbose. And then you set that up and you forget about it. Okay. Then you go off into Nancy land and you say just sprite.image and things just work. So it's kind of a funny example in my mind of, that tension between kind of ASP.NET, which has some parts of it that are very old.
Yes.
And Nancy, which has a very fresh perspective.
Yeah. And you see that, I think once you start working with it, you, like I said, you see your style changing. Mm-hmm. you go from being verbose, you go from being very specific to, I don't need to be that specific anymore. I can make this easy for the consumer of my app. And I think that's the big thing is once you start looking at it as somebody else might have to consume this, you want it to look pretty. Mm. you want it to be easy to use. And that's kind of cool thing about Nancy. Yeah. The response as JSON or, you know, all these extension methods and making your API very visually appealing as well as technically appealing, mm-hmm. right, is nice to be a part of.
I think that's something that I've learned from open source, and I feel that people who have been working in ASP.NET or .NET for the last 10 years and haven't played with open source may have lost their sense of fun. You know? And I think that when folks do stuff like this, and also like the guys on the Code 52 project, and you know, I tend to gravitate towards open source teams and projects that have a sense of fun and a sense of code as poetry.
Yes, and if you ever do a pull request into Nancy, you'll actually encounter. I talked through Twitter and you know GitHub this morning on a pull request I made, and Andreas sent back basically his style cop issues that he had with my thing. And he said that Grumpy Dev calls him the human style cop. Yeah. You have to do it his way, mm-hmm. and it has to be that way. And it's not, you know, it's not bad. It's great.
No,
you know,
no.
Because then you're always dealing with the same thing. So if I go right in and look at the code, I know what it's going to look like.
Yeah, exactly. But also there is a main author. And that author has a style. And it's like when you buy a book written by Stephen King and then you realize halfway through the book that there's like another author.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, wow. You know, he did a really good job of writing like Stephen King. You know, it's like Stephen King with Richard Sorrell in a very, very, very small font at the bottom. You know, but there's a style and the style works. So let's all do it. I think Linus on the Linux project has the same kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being opinionated.
No, and I think it's very good to be opinionated.
Yeah, I like this idea of frictionless. The other thing that's fun about Nancy is that, like you said before at the very beginning, it's extremely relaxed about what you host it under. So you can host it under ASP.NET if you want to. You can host it self-hosting, so from the command line. You can host it on Mono, on Linux. And then there's this thing called OWIN that I'm going to have to do some shows on. OWIN.
Yes. So open Web. I can't remember the entire acronym.
Open Web Interface for .NET.
Yes. Yes. And if you've been on the posts or forum, you know, forum or chat lately, there's this push to actually make everything that it's hosting under basically implement Owen. So even the ASP.NET hosting would implement Owen. So they're going to put a little shim in there to do that. I believe Grumpy Dev or Steven and is it Dave Fowler? Mm-hmm. We're talking about that just right. The other day about changing the implementation so that everything has this one interface, which is very, you know, Ruby Rack like.
That's exactly what it is. And I think we are going to do that, and we're going to do it for, you know, all of ASP.NET. There's no reason that everything shouldn't be pluggable.
Yes.
So I think that in a few, you know, a future or a coming version of ASP.NET will have that. And I think Louis Desjardins and mm-hmm. or Louis Desjardins, depending on how you want to pronounce it, are working on that actively. And I know that I'm going to have Damian Edwards and David come on the show, and we're going to get into more detail about why Owen matters. So I think open is the goal, right? We've talked about this before, that the ASP.NET team wants to kind of compete on a level playing field. So one of the other things that we're hoping to do, and I've talked a little bit to Andreas about this, but probably in the spring, is I want people to be able to say file new Nancy application. And I realize that the team could go and do all the work of making a project template mm-hmm. today, but it's just too complicated. The amount of work required to install a new project template in an organized way is just, it's a hassle. So what if we could make project templates exchangeable like NuGet packages? So I could just say, you know, install package nancy.projecttemplate and then go file a new project.
Right.
You know, then things start getting more interesting. And I think it'll introduce more people to projects like Nancy. And again, give that idea of the level playing field.
Right. You have all of these different frameworks that have different opinions, and you know, you need to find the one that you're aligned with.
Exactly. And it's totally, and again, some people believe it, some people don't, but there's no reason for the ASP.NET team to say, oh, you've really got to use ASP.NET. You know, ultimately, I don't care what you use. I want you to use whatever makes you happy. It doesn't keep us working or not working if you use one project or another project, you know? Ultimately, right. Have fun, build stuff that makes you happy, and I guess the bosses care if you use Windows, but otherwise, I'm not too worried about it. So where do you think people should start for Nancy? I think probably the Pluralsight Nancy course, eh?
Well, there's Pluralsight course. There's a bunch. There was one recently, Why Nancy? Jonathan Channon put out on his mm-hmm. His site, and there's several, you know, free videos as well, not just Pluralsight, that people have put out to say, hey, you know, this is how you get started. Mm-hmm. But it's fairly simple to use. You can jump out on the forum, on the chat, in the Jabber room, and there's always somebody willing to help if you have questions. I'm there very often, but yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, people can check it out at nancyfx.org. I'll have links in the show notes for your course and great. Also a link to the Jabber room so people can interact with the team and the folks that are excited about using Nancy.
That'd be cool.
Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
No problem.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.